Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
The Rose of Tralee winner, Caitlin Cummins, says she wants to inspire women into male-dominated trades and roles, and she's with me now. Caitlin Cummins, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations to you, first and foremost, on a superb win. I think people are extremely impressed by you. You're inspiring conversation already, Caitlin, with your words of inspiration of trying to inspire young girls and women into male-dominated trades and roles, you say. Do you know what struck me when I read that piece in the Irish Times this morning? That no man will ever know what it's like to work in a male-dominated profession. What is it like from your perspective?
From my perspective, I suppose, I think there's a good bit of crack in it, and you wouldn't expect, for me anyways, going into my field, I didn't expect the lads to be so generous and so supportive. I just kind of thought that it would kind of leave me off to one side, but at this day and age, like, so many lads have gotten so mature, and like, they're really, really supportive and encouraging, and they just want to see you be as successful as they want to be as well.
Okay.
It's just really, really encouraging.
You're an apprentice electrician, isn't that it?
Yes.
Okay. Why did you not expect the lads to be so encouraging?
I don't know. I just thought it would kind of be, it was so different for me, I suppose. I didn't know any other women that were in this field or trying to go into it or anything, and I didn't know what to expect whatsoever. And I don't know, I just had my head turned, and I was absolutely delighted with how the lads did respond to me wanting to do it.
How did you choose it? How did you choose to be an electrician, Caitlin? And were you conscious that it was male-dominated at the start?
I was, yes, definitely. I had to do work experience when I was in TY for the LCVP programme in school. And I said to my dad, I was like, I don't want to do the traditional ones that everyone does, going to a primary school and going to the vets. I wanted to do something different. I grew up on a dairy farm, so I'm very used to working with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad was like, why don't you go to the local electrician and do a trade or do an apprenticeship? And I was like, what's an apprenticeship? And he was like, it's where you get paid to learn. I was like, fantastic, sign me up.
Yeah,
and then I went off for the week then with my local electrician, JJ, and he took me on for the week, and we went to so many different sites, and I absolutely loved it. Seeing the different schematics of every different setting was unbelievable, and it was just so intriguing and so interesting and so, so different everywhere you go. It was amazing.
Really? And the reaction you get then when you go to jobs, are people happy to see a female electrician or an apprentice electrician?
I think they definitely are intrigued, and there's a few clients that we've had in my workplace who have said it's great to see a woman in the trade, or they'd be asking me how I'm getting on, and they're very, very encouraging, I have to say now, and they'd always be egging you on to do better, and to just, they're just so supportive.
Okay. Caitlin Cummins, Rose of Tralee winner and apprentice electrician, stay with me. There's another Caitlin on the line. Caitlin Madden, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, how are things?
Not too bad. It's good to talk to you, I must say. Am I right in saying you're a third-year apprentice electrician with Shure Engineering? Is that it?
Yes, third-year apprentice, but I'm just in my phase three at the moment with Shure Engineering.
Okay. How's it going?
Really, really well. I have never looked back since day one of walking in on site with Shure.
Okay. And what brought you into it? How did it come into your mind first?
Well, I suppose I never actually knew that I wanted to do an apprenticeship. The idea of doing one was never given to us in secondary school. So I went down the college route, doing 2 years of science in college. And I knew myself, look, I'm not enjoying this. I didn't like my course. So I went home to mum and dad and sat them down and was like, this isn't working out for me. They probably weren't too enthusiastic at the start, you know, hearing that I wanted to drop out. But after that, they were like, look, Caitlin, do you want to try and give an apprenticeship a go? I had done engineering and metalwork inside in secondary school, so I knew that I liked working with my hands and I was quite good at it. So dad was like, go give an electrical apprenticeship a go and see how you like it. And I've never looked back.
Okay. And did you have any qualms or reactions on the site on in your workplace, first of all, Caitlin? What was it like initially?
Initially, it was a bit daunting. Coming into site, you know, walking up to a group of lads that were talking about something that I wasn't, like, you know, fully aware of or fully knew what was going on. So it was a bit scary going in. But I just kept saying to myself, look, put yourself forward. Let them know that you're there to help. Let them know that you want to expand your knowledge on it. And that's exactly what I did. And it's just been great, great experience all together.
Mm. You said something very interesting there, walking up to a group of lads in the conversation. Now, I'm sure you're talking about maybe the job. They were talking about stuff that and nobody would have known at the start what you're on about terms and
exactly,
processes,
yeah,
and so on. But can I ask you this? Are the conversations different when it's a male-dominated environment compared to female-dominated or properly mixed gender environments? So, I mean, are the conversations in your experience different?
I suppose they can be a bit different, but I think that's just the culture of the kind of the trade work. You know, I think the culture of working in the trade is a lot more, there's probably a bit more banter, a bit of slagging going on, you know, a general kind of crack with the lads. But I think it's great because it, you know, it makes you a bit more relaxed going into work. You know, not everything is taken so, so seriously. You're able to go in, have a bit of fun, and, you know, it makes the day a bit shorter as well.
Okay, very good. Caitlin, stay with me. Patra is on the line. Patra O'Flaherty, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're also working in a male-dominated environment, I believe. What kind of work do you do?
So I'm an eighth-generation stonemason and stonecutter. So I'm actually the first female registered with Sulis in 30 years to do my trade.
As a stonemason, wow, that is that is impressive. And what brought you into stonemasonry?
So originally I had planned on being a nurse, and I was going through college, and I come from a family of stonemasons, and me and my brother are eighth generation. My brother was working on our workshop, and I was in college, and I was taking days off here and there to help him, and then I just became obsessed with it. And then we sat down and talked about it, and it was decided, like, look, maybe you should go for this and try it out and see how it feels. And yeah, the rest is history.
Well, can I tell Caitlin and Caitlin, being an electrician, I am bamboozled by it. I don't think I'd trust myself to go near it. But being a stonemason, I admire as well for other reasons. I think it's like the stuff stonemasons can do is beautiful, really beautiful. But the fact that it's male-dominated is kind of what we're talking about, Petra. Was that were you apprehensive in any way about that?
Look, when I first started my apprenticeship, I didn't even think there was many young people in the country that did my trade, because there's only one college in Ireland that actually does have the, you know, stonecraft section. So when I went down to college then, and I met so many, like, young people down there, all the lads, and they were all so nice. And it's different, like, it's way different from what I had planned, like, originally, but it's definitely the making of me. I've loved every moment of it.
Yeah. Somebody's texted to say, Patra, maybe you were born to be a stonemason, given the famous city in Jordan that's cut from the rock.
My dad named me that.
Your dad said that, did he?
My dad named me Petra after Petra in Jordan.
You're not serious.
Yeah. And when I was growing up, my dad always said, oh, you'd be a good stonemason, why don't you try it? And I'd always be like, no way, I'm not doing that. But here we are.
So it's maybe fate. Fate that you're a stonemason. So that's incredible, I must say. And can I ask you all then, the two Caitlins and Patra, and we're getting calls to 51551, by the way, if you're working in a male-dominated environment, the question I had for you, or the plea was, tell us the good, the bad and the ugly. Is there an ugly side to it at all, Patra, before I ask the other Caitlins?
Look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There can be bad experiences for all apprentices, but as a woman, there's been times where if I'm in, like, in my college phase, and there's men in the different classes, whatever they're doing, they give you grief. But, like, you have to just, you know what your priorities are and tell them where to go. So, you know,
banter, grief, slagging, fun filled, or something else.
There can be a mix of it. Like, now, obviously, it's not as bad as it would have been many years ago, because I do think the view of women in trades has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. But, like, even in jokes, sometimes you're kind of, like, a little bit irritated by it, you know? So you just have to step up for what you believe in, and, you know, put yourself forward and be true.
You're throwing your eyes to heaven as a rest. Guffaw, is that it? Stay with me. Eileen is on the line. 51551. Eileen, good afternoon.
Hello, how is everybody today?
Very well, Eileen. Thanks for joining the conversation with us. You're in the plumbing trade.
I am indeed, yeah. I started plumbing up here in Donegal probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I was taken on by a local company. A guy took a chance on me and I've never looked back. It's been great.
Why? Why is it so great?
I have, I'm probably a lot older than the other girls ringing in there, and I have a young family, so it allows me to work the hours that I want and, you know, work it around my family life.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, that suits anyone, I suppose, but it suits you, you say. And when you arrive,
yes,
when you arrive at the door, Eileen, ding dong, the plumber is here. What's the reaction?
It's always very interesting because every door that you go to, the job is always very, very different. I've never had a negative experience, not yet. It can be quite amusing sometimes. I find that women prefer women to come to their house. They much prefer to see a woman, a tradesperson come who is a woman. I found a big difference from
really?
When I would go in with the guy that I was working with. We always went to the woman of the house because she knows her house in and out and she would be able to pinpoint where the problem was.
Whereas the man is clueless.
Whereas the man would, they would tend to stand over the top of you either in disbelief that you actually knew what you were doing or, you know, just to make sure that you were doing it properly. But I always took the attitude, well, you had to call me, buddy, so you've no reason to be standing over the top of me.
So, Eileen, this man who has called for help, this clueless mm-hmm. man who answers the door, stands mm-hmm. over the mm-hmm. female plumber to make sure she's doing a proper job, is that it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have that 8 out of 10 times, yeah.
Really? Wow.
The women don't tend to stand over the top. You go in and you try to find the woman of the house. You say, right, where do you think the problem is? They know their house in and out, so they just pretty much leave you to it. I think as a woman going into another woman's house, they trust you more. We listen to the homeowner a bit more.
Mm.
We answer their messages via social media. We turn up when we say we're going to because we understand what it's like to be a woman in the house trying to juggle family. You know, you can't call between 3 and 4 because she's going to pick up her kids, you know.
Yeah.
We tend to see things a little bit differently than perhaps a man calling.
Oh, but my
absolutely,
God. It's like you're giving me a glimpse into another world, Eileen, I can tell you, because we all know, and I suppose in fairness to tradespeople, it's not just tradespeople, but we all know I'll be there sometime between 9 a.m. and the 25th of August. That kind of thing.
Yes.
So how do you do that? I mean, it can't be down to surely that you're a woman, that you're organised and efficient, surely.
I think that, I would actually disagree, Cormac. I think as a woman, tradeswoman, we are a little bit more organised. And we do tend to kind of come back to the customer if you are going to be late or you can't make it that day. And I think, as I say, it's predominantly women that we're going into in the houses, and they really, really appreciate that connection with them.
Yeah.
The fact that we are getting back to them. But I have absolutely had quite a few male clients, stand over the top of me to make sure that you're doing it properly.
Really? So you provide
absolutely
an efficient, effective service. Lord, deliver us more female plumbers, I say, 51551 and elsewhere. Well, how long are you doing the job, did you say, Eileen?
I like the other callers there, I would have always been good with my hands. And I started off, I went to America like a lot of people my age, and I worked in construction out there for years. And out in America, it's no big deal at all to see a woman come into your door to fix things or to see a woman working on the highway and stuff. So I came back to Ireland and had my family, and I always had an idea that I wanted to be a plumber. I don't know what it is about it, but I always had an idea, and I saw an advert on Facebook and I just placed a phone call, and Gary from Rapid Plumbing in Ashone took a chance on me, and I've never looked back. It's been great.
My goodness, I must say, I'll come back to Caitlin Cummins, the winner of the Rose of Tralee, for a second, an apprentice electrician. Stay with me, Eileen. Maybe it's different, Caitlin, for an apprentice, but have you had men stand over you, kind of, quote unquote, checking if you're doing a good job?
Not so much at my job now, really, no. The lads in work would trust me an awful lot. I'd say I'm quite competent in my job, that I do a good job with most of my work, that they don't really feel the need to double check my work, mm-hmm. Which is quite nice. It's quite empowering for myself. I haven't had many really bad experiences with my job or even in college or anything like that. I found everybody really, really supportive.
Do you find that trust is a thing when you come to do a job at a house or whatever the case may be? As Eileen says, women tend to trust female plumbers in her case. Maybe that little bit more. Is that something you've noticed, Caitlin?
I wouldn't have much experience now with outside of my job because I'm working in a workshop. I'm doing industrial, commercial, like control panels and automation systems. So most of my work is based in a workshop where we just have customers come into us.
Okay.
I do think trust is a big thing with it. I think if you work well and like they know that you're interested in your job and that you actually do want to do a good job at what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I think that makes an awful difference.
I think it was Caitlin Madden that was talking about the conversations, that they might be a little bit different. And it just struck me as I spoke with Caitlin Cummins, I'll come back to Caitlin Madden for a second, that no man, I say at the very start, will ever know what it's like to go into work in a male-dominated profession, obviously. And there are very few, well, there are female-dominated professions, very often the caring professions, isn't that right? But it is different. Do you think it's difficult to get that across, what it feels like to men?
I suppose maybe in some cases, yeah. Maybe with the older generation, they might not be, you know, as comfortable with working with a female, you know, just due to tradition of the job being male-dominated. But I think a lot, you know, of the younger lads coming into the apprenticeships and stuff, they're seeing more women coming into it and they're starting to get the idea, like, this is not just a man's world. This is, you know, it's in everyone's world and everyone can go into the trade expand on their knowledge in it.
Mm-hmm. Patra, is that something you've come across, the conversations that might be a little bit off sometimes?
Sometimes, but I find that I've been quite lucky. Like all the lads that I've worked around, either at home or in college, you know, they're pretty chill. So I've had a good enough experience.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that sometimes comes across when you're, let's say, if I can call it a minority in a certain profession, in whatever category a minority, that sometimes a minority feels that you have to prove yourself a lot more, way beyond what the majority in that profession would have to do to be accepted. Is that something, Petra, that you feel, that as a woman in a male-dominated profession, your work has to be above the average to be quote-unquote acceptable?
Yeah, I do feel that. Like, I would have that feeling, not only from, you know, the point of being a woman and wanting to show that I can do this, but I also have, like, a long family history of what I do. So it's also, like, I want to prove I'm not just doing this because my family do it. I'm doing this because it's what I want. So I'd be quite determined in that way as well.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, you do have to not let down the family, so to speak, and then yourself as well. The other thing here is we started the conversation with Caitlin Cummins inspiring young girls and women to go into male-dominated roles and professions. And I'll come to Caitlin in just a second. But Eileen, do you think you stand as a role model for other women or younger girls who might see you at work?
Well, I wish decades ago when I first had the idea of going into the trades that I could have had someone, another female to talk to about it. As I said, I was in America, but that was obviously miles away. So there was really nobody in Ireland doing it. I remember one conversation I had with my local training centre. I was about 35 at the time and I rang up and inquiring and about a plumbing apprenticeship. And the lady on the phone actually said, "Oh, is it for your son?" And I says, "No, it's actually for me." And that absolutely, completely put me off. And that's the first hurdle, that was the phone call that I made to get the apprenticeship. It is difficult for women to get into the trades. And I just want to, I think it's fantastic for Caitlin to be promoting this.
Really?
I think Ireland is slowly changing. But I hope to see young girls coming into the trades in the future, because there's no reason why we can't do this.
But
there's
no reason at all. Isn't it very appealing that in your own ways, in your own private and professional lives, you're changing the narrative, let's say, or changing the nature of the profession that is male dominated. But what do you think, Petra, of the winner of the Rose of Tralee, Caitlin Cummins, taking that a step further and saying, I do want to inspire young girls and women into male dominated professions? What do you make of that stance?
I think it's great. Also, congratulations, Caitlin. But it's great. Like, I think if I was in school and I had seen that, like when I was in school, now we talked about apprenticeships, and if I had seen that as a headline, you know, like the Rose Tralee is an electrician apprentice and she wants to push apprenticeships, I would have been like, oh, what's that? And like, thought about it and been more likely to pick it as an option, you know?
Yeah, why does it matter that it's a Rose Tralee winner saying this?
I think also it proves that, like, you know, you can be like your feminine self and be in a trade. You don't have to put yourself into a box. You can be whatever it is that you're going to be, mm-hmm. you know?
I mean, the numbers watching the Rose of Tralee are astronomical, I must say. They're huge. So you do have, Caitlin Cummins, a huge platform. And it's one thing to do, to become an electrician or be an apprentice electrician. But it takes something else, I think, in terms of vision, to be able to take that stance and use your platform for exactly what you're doing right now. Is that something that was premeditated on your part?
No, not so much. I kind of, when I originally went for the Leash Rose, I was just doing it to make friends and then to make more girlfriends in Leash. And then I think, I suppose, it just kind of got out to the public that I was an apprentice electrician in Leash, and then RTE became quite interested in it then, and then I did a video with them. And then I think it just kind of went from there. I didn't expect it to be a platform for myself, but I am so happy that I can use this platform now to create awareness about it and just keep supporting women around Ireland that want to do an apprenticeship, or they want to go into the male-dominated industry, mm-hmm. or they want to do something that is entirely different to college, like the traditional route that most people do take or feel like they do have to take.
And do you feel you're breaking kind of glass ceilings in those professions?
Pardon?
Do you feel like you're breaking glass ceilings, so to speak, in those professions? That I know other women in other areas, like the boardroom, for example, in a corporate environment, say it's hard to get onto the board, or it's hard to be CEO, it's hard to break that glass ceiling. But glass ceilings can be broken into professions as well, or into trades if they're male dominated. I mean, do you feel that that's being done here by you and the other women entering male dominated trades and roles, that you're actually breaking the mold?
I do think we are breaking glass ceilings, and it's creating such a diversity in the community and like all over Ireland as well. But it's great to have that equality, like the gender equality, and just be able to prove that women can do what lads can do as well, and lads can do what women can do. And I think that we just need to start getting on further in the world now and starting to realise that basically women are the same as lads, and we might be, I might be a slightly bit biased, but I think we might be slightly better. But
I don't think I can disagree with you based on the evidence that you're presenting here. That's for sure. Well, Caitlin Cummins, Rose of Tralee winner, skilled advocate, I must say, and an apprentice electrician. Congratulations to you, and thanks for coming on. The other Caitlin and Petra and Eileen and all of our contributors, thank you very much indeed. 51551, and you can email liveline@rte.ie. Back in 1 minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
I just threw it out there, asked if it was safe to swim in the Liffey on yesterday's programme, or in city rivers nationwide, without disinfectant, or would you emerge with a third nostril or something else afterwards, given the pollution and contamination that we all think affects our rivers? Well, Ronan is with me now. Ronan Dalton, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cormac. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. You've been swimming in the Liffey a long time, I believe.
Yeah, I'd be no stranger to the Liffey. I've been swimming in the Liffey Swim since 1975, and I've done 43 of them.
Wow, and so, you've won as well.
I did manage. Now, not a lot of people know that, but yes, in 2023, I managed to win it after 42 attempts.
Well, they know it now, Ronan boy. They know they know you're a winner now. And all those years swimming in the Liffey, no third nostril, Ronan, no 11th toe emerged or nothing unusual as a result of all the bacteria.
Not that you'd notice, but no, I honestly, I think, you know, when the Liffey race first came into being in 1920, it was, I think it was a demonstration by, at the time, Dublin City Council to say the Liffey is safe to swim in, and the water quality was good. Now, it did go through a period of in the 70s to the 80s, where, in, you know, the inimitable song of Bagatelle, the Liffey as it stank like hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, there was a time when the Liffey wasn't great to swim in.
Yeah.
But bring it up to today, the Liffey is in great shape.
Is it safe?
And the city part of the Liffey.
Is it safe, though, to swim in the Liffey?
Now, you'd need a doctor to answer that.
Yeah.
But all of the experiences of people who swam, the hundreds, the thousands of people who have swam and continue to swim in the Liffey, it's not just about the Liffey swim.
Mm.
There are people who are kayaking on the Liffey, on the city centre. They're sailing on the Liffey.
Yeah, but that's different. That's different because you're outside of the water. And in fact, let me argue this, Ronan. The Liffey swim is different because it's organised and aren't you disinfected afterwards?
Yeah, there's two types of disinfectants. The Dublin Fire Brigade are usually there with a decontamination unit, but it's mostly water and you know, some Head and Shoulders to soap you down. The best disinfectant would be a mouthful of good Irish whiskey, rinse it around, and swallow it
to burn the bacteria.
Absolutely, and then off to Mulligan's for points to make
Christ.
Sure.
Have you ever taken a mouthful of the Liffey?
Yes, you can't help but swallow Liffey water.
And tell me this,
when you're swimming.
Tell me
in
this.
The race.
What does the Liffey? What does the Liffey taste like?
It's a mix. It's peat, peaty coming down from Capure, and then there could be some aftertaste that you couldn't necessarily describe, they're harmless enough. There would have been a time when you swam it. You know that smell of hops that you used to get from the Guinness Brewery around Dublin.
Peaty like a pint.
Sometimes you'd get the
taste.
Yeah, sometimes you'd get that taste of the smell of hops.
Ronan, peaty like a pint, or peaty like the morning after a pint. But you have no qualms. Do you train in the Liffey?
No. Look, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, you're not walking down there to say I'm jumping into pristine water. It's not, but it's to me and to many thousands of other Liffey swimmers who, you know, we had an exhibition water polo match down at the new Dublin water sports complex, you know, and we were satisfied to bring our junior members, boys, girls, our senior members to swim and play water polo. Just at the Dublin complex. That was only last Saturday week.
Okay.
There's another swim on next Saturday week, run by Leinster Open Sea, and they're having that from the Three Arena straight up almost to the Customs House.
Wow. So
there'll be 300 or 400 people swimming in that.
Because I've been reading recently, and I told listeners yesterday that a tourist stopped me and said, "Can I swim in the Liffey?" And I really didn't know what to say to the poor man. Go on and try it or chance it, I think I said to him. But I was reading about the Seine in Paris and looking at the photos of the urban plages or the beaches they have.
Yeah,
on,
yes,
and it just looks beautiful. They've cleaned it up. It's changed the nature of the relationship people have, Parisians have, with the river running through it. And I just said, why not have a Lido or an area in the Liffey where people can routinely, on their way home from work or into work, swim. Wouldn't it be fantastic running?
Oh, of course it would. Now, and I know the Parisians pre-Olympics spent billions on cleaning up the Seine. You know, in fairness, Dublin City Council, the Dublin Port and the EPA have done Trojan work. And the Liffey, that part of the Liffey that flows through the city centre, you can't swim in it. Now, I caution people, can or can't? Yeah. You can. I think you can. But, you know, I think there's, you know, you can't just routinely just dive in. I think there's rules and regulations about swimming. You have to get permission or whatever. That's like, you'd have to get permission to swim the Liffey Swim or any of the... But, you know, as an amenity, the river flowing through the city, of course, it has all the potential. And something like the Dublin Docklands water sport complex is testament to that. Well, we had a water polo match for kids. And everybody got out fine. No glowing in the dark. No extra nose, toes. They were fine. I mean, it was a bit icky getting in. But, you know, once they were in, they realised this isn't as bad as I thought.
Yeah. And it brings, actually, number one, I swim in the sea. And it certainly shortens the winter when you swim in the sea, I think. And it changes the nature of your relationship with the area. I have before me, Ronan, a statement from Swan Leisure. The Swan Leisure Centre in Rathmines. And they say from September that there's a water sports centre to be launched in the Docklands. I mean, that's going to be fantastic as well.
No, and that's where Swan are great. And they we have a long association, our Half Moon Swimming Club have a long association with Swan. And, you know, we ran that water polo exhibition. It's a soft launch for this. And it's absolutely super. You can walk around it. You can walk by it. It's just on the quays there, just between the Samuel Beckett Bridge and the Jeannie Johnson. And it's a fabulous place. Absolutely fabulous.
Do you know, I know I'm talking to a Liffey Swim winner, but I don't know if I'd swim in the Liffey yet. It'll take a whole lot of convincing yet. Willie's on the line. Say with me, Ronan. Willie, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You swim in the Liffey, do you?
I have swam in the Liffey on a number of occasions. I haven't swam in it for 10 years. And the reason for that is that I'm an official at an event that takes place in the Liffey every year called the Dublin City Triathlon.
Okay. But you get hundreds or thousands of people applying, I'm sure, to what? Swim in the Liffey. And you can stand over the safety of it, Willie.
There are water quality tests carried out to ensure that the World Triathlon health characteristics of the water are adhered to.
Okay, so it is safe. Willie Purcell has spoken, folks, on Liveline. So, and that's happening this weekend, Willie, the Dublin City Triathlon. Isn't that correct? The 23rd?
That takes place in Island Bridge this Saturday morning, commencing 8:30.
How many swimmers?
In the order of 700.
700, wow. And they'll go from where? Where in the Liffey will they swim, Willie?
In the vicinity of the Garda, the boat club in Island Bridge.
Okay, out towards
Chapel Izzet. Between Island Bridge and Chapel Izzet.
Okay.
That stretch of the River Liffey.
And I used to live out there, so I know that stretch of the river is nice and flat and calm. It is beautiful out there. And the water is tested, you say. Has anyone in your knowledge, Willie, ever got sick from swimming in the Liffey?
Not to my knowledge, but I certainly, because I'd be involved in many aspects of the event, I wouldn't get closely involved in that, but I've no doubt that people, you know, if they try and drink a Liffey instead of swimming in it, they could have an upset stomach after it. But for the majority of swimmers who do the event and come out, you never hear of any problems afterwards.
Okay.
Go into a 40k cycle and a 10k run after it, and they come through that.
Yeah.
In good condition also.
So that's the Liveline public health message. Don't drink the Liffey, swim in it, Willie. So look at, stay with me, Willie and Ronan. After the break, a very short break, I'm going to talk to the first winner of the Women's Liffey Swim in 1991. And believe it or not, She lives to tell the tale.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Up the bleeding Dubs. They're saying, they're telling me, the Dubs, that it's safe to swim in the River Liffey. I don't hear anything from the Corconians to 51551 about the Lee, or the Galwegians about the Corrib, or the people from Limerick about the part of the Shannon that flows around Limerick, or the Lagan in Belfast. Is it safe to swim in any of those rivers or city rivers? Anyway, the first winner of the Women's Liffey Swim in 1991, would you believe it, is still alive. She hasn't been harmed by swimming in the Liffey. Siobhan O'Driscoll, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, how are you?
You're very welcome to the programme. We're talking about the safety or not about swimming in the Liffey, Siobhan, and I've been asking Ronan or Willie if they've been harmed by swimming there. No qualms whatsoever you have about swimming in the Liffey.
Yeah, I would agree to a point. I mean, certainly in recent years, it is much, much cleaner than it has been going back. I remember in the early years, certainly when I was swimming, it felt like you were diving into soup and it was thick. You know, compared to open water, like when you're in the sea, it was that much thicker than
really?
The open water.
Thick football,
but nowadays... Pardon? Of what? I do not know.
You don't want to know.
It felt that way. There was a difference between, say, open water, say, swimming in Dunleary or wherever. It felt fresher, you know. But no, the Liffey has improved an awful lot. And it's down to initiatives as well, you know, of the Dublin Sweeper boat that collects debris, say, from the, you know, that are floating in the Liffey,
mm-hmm.
and that's really helped. And then there's cleaning of the walls. That initiative came out in actually this year, but it certainly it has got cleaner. I wouldn't say it's totally clean. I heard you earlier talking about anybody being sick, but I have heard people being sick over the years.
You?
But
recently,
there haven't been many.
Siobhan.
Yeah.
Have they been sick recently? Because you say it's clean. You say it's a lot cleaner, but down around Houston Station now, you see trolleys or cones in the river, and people seem to feck stuff in.
They're not the problem.
I know that.
They're not the problem. It's more like
the soup.
Real disease and that sort of thing, where rats, you know, urinating and, you know, ingesting that is the issue. The trolleys are not a problem, you know. There's enough water in there to not hit into them or anything like that, you know.
Rats urinating in the river. So, God almighty, you're not doing
anything.
You're not doing anything for a man wondering about jumping in to swim in the River Liffey, I can tell you. You say people, Siobhan, still drink a can of Coke after swimming in the Liffey. Why?
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people have done, you know, are doing, still doing. To this day, and it's to prevent bacteria and stomach problems, really. They firmly believe in it. It has to be the full sugar one, you know. It can't be any diet stuff. But it is. They firmly believe it, and
I think Ronan.
Why not?
Ronan suggested a good nip of whiskey, and you're saying Coke. Put them together and you have a night out, I think. Stay with me, Siobhan. Brendan McAvoy, you've done 14 Liffey swims. Now, I don't think, as good as a Liffey swim is, and I admire anyone who can do it, what I'm talking about really is routinely swimming in the Liffey, and if it's safe to do so, because there is a you know, decontamination process after the Liffey swim. But do you think it is safe, Brendan?
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. And delighted to hear all those people talking about the benefits and the joys of swimming in the Liffey. Now, I swam in the Liffey when I was 16. I'm now 84. So it hasn't done me any harm. Now, the Liffey swim is full of mystique, because if you won an Olympic medal for swimming,
mm-hmm.
people come back and ask you, have you ever done the Liffey? So doing the Liffey qualified you. Did you do the Liffey? I did. That qualified you as a swimmer. No matter what you did afterwards, you were called a swimmer.
Oh, wow.
Now, can you tell a small story about a very good friend of ours? He was in the swimming club, a great singer. He turned out a superstar singer. And I said, I won't mention his name. I said, you know, people ask you, do you swim? Because he was in our swimming club.
Mm.
And I said, unless you do the Liffey, they won't take you as a swimmer. And he says, okay, I'll do it. And he was a slow swimmer, and I said, it's a handicap. Now, those days, Ronan, Guinness used to, we undress in Watling Street,
yeah.
You take your clothes off, they put them into a Guinness sack,
yeah.
They bring all those clothes down to Tara Street Baths, and you went down to Tara Street Baths, and your clothes were there, and a hot bath waiting for you.
Yeah.
So the Guinness puts with their, remember the old barges they had, the Guinness barges?
Yeah.
You wouldn't remember those. There were barges on the Liffey where Guinness used to put all the metal or all the wooden casks
mm-hmm.
into the barge, and they'd sail down the Liffey to their own ships down on the quays. Romantic times. Now, so we'd all jump off the barge and off we'd go. Mm.
But the singer, yeah, go on.
Yeah, I told this lad, I said, do it. And he said, you're a great singer, but he's also a great swimmer.
Mm.
Now, he wasn't a good swimmer. And there was a handicap. And he was off at go, and I was off at 10 minutes. And I said, don't worry. I said, I'll be behind you and make sure you're okay. So, and I said, there's also 8 bridges down the Liffey. If you feel tired, you can get out.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he jumped in and off he went. And I jumped in 10 minutes afterwards. I didn't see a sight of him all the way down until I got to the finishing line. I said, oh, God, the poor devil, would he have drowned?
God, did
so
he make
I got
it?
Out of the pool. No, I tell you, listen to me.
Mm.
So I got out of the pool and went over to have the bath in Tara Street to clean ourselves down. And there he was lying in the bath, bathing himself. And I said, Tony, I said, how the hell, what happened to you? Oh, Brendan, he says, I'm sorry, he says. I was swimming down, I swam into a plank of water, and I thought it was a dead body.
Oh,
so I got out of Queen Street Bridge. I said, how the hell did you get down here? He said, I came down by bus. So got the bus down from Queen Street Bridge down to Tara Street, these togs.
Oh, I think I'd be following Tony's example, Brendan, I can tell you. He should have gone for a pint.
Well, I'll tell you about afterwards. But now, I'll tell you, there's a mystique about Guinness. And I remember one day, you can swim as fast as you can walk. That's how you gauge yourself in long-distance swimming. You can walk the same speed as swimming. I was walking out from Watling Street, and there's an empty barrel in the Liffey. I said, I'll follow the barrel down. So I walked down the Liffey all the way down the quays, and the barrel was standing in front of me. When I got to the finishing line in Independent Bridge, the bloody barrel beat me by 200 metres. So floating down the Liffey is a joy. You can do it on your back.
Yeah.
There's a nice slow down. Now you're talking about the health of it. We were told when you get in, take a gulp of the water. If you taste seawater, you're okay. If you don't taste sea water, keep your mouth shut as much as you can.
I don't know about that, because I must say. I don't know. I think I'd be drinking the whiskey and the Coke and anything else going beforehand. Siobhan, can I ask Siobhan this question, though? Because in a way, wouldn't it be beautiful? Wouldn't it be beautiful for any city, but the Liffey, since we're talking about Dublin, to have an area that people can jump in and know it's safe and know it's clean and go for a dip before work, after work, on a Saturday or a Sunday? I mean, is it something we should move towards in our cities, do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely think we should be making more use of the Liffey. It's such an amenity in Dublin. But like Swan Leisure have established a facility down where we were actually playing the water polo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Dublin Water Sports Centre. And they've put nearly 18 million into this. And it's a huge project. There's hot showers, there's meeting rooms, it's a massive facility. But the pontoon actually goes out across, over the River Liffey, and it can go up and down. And, that's a great initiative now and facility to have. So that could be open, I think it's nearly open now.
Yeah, I think from September.
We'll make use of it.
I mentioned that for sure. Look, fascinating. I want to hear from people who swim in the Liffey and feel it safe, and also in the Lee and the Corrib and the Laggan and the Shannon and other rivers. But Siobhan, thank you. Willie, thank you. All of our contributors, Brendan and so on, thank you as well. And Ronan, 51551, the number is 0818758 15. Back in 1 minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
We're back to women entering male-dominated professions and roles and so on. Joanne, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you very much indeed. What's your point, please, in this?
Well, I'm 31 years a subcontractor. We mainly work in the commercial side of things, but I am loving listening to women getting into the trades.
Mm.
I'd highly recommend it.
It is not a sexist business. People just want you to do the job and do it right. They don't care if you're heavy blue with pink spots.
Really? No sexism in your experience?
Not really. I mean, they're always the odd person, but they're going to be different anyway, if that makes sense to you, whether I'm a woman or someone else is gay or someone else is whatever. You know, they're always going to be like that. But in the main, no. No.
Okay. And what
I have.
What work do you do, Joanne?
We're tiling contractors.
Okay.
We do a lot of tiling work, but mainly commercial, like, so we'd be doing hospitals, hotels, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Housing estates.
And when you say you're a contractor, are you actually doing the tiling work, or is it your company?
It's my company, and I can do some of it, but mainly on the gopher if I'm on site, or I do the mark out for the drawings or something like that, but I'm not a very good tiler, no.
Right, well, you're
so I just generally tend to run the job.
Yeah, you're certainly better than me, I can tell you that, with hand on heart. So you do the hiring and firing, mostly the hiring in this day and age, I'd say.
No, we're fussy, because it's actually a very skilled job, and we have a lot of really good guys working with us now. Now we used to employ 25 full-time tilers, but now we mainly go subcontract, and we have a couple of full-time guys as well. And then different personalities suit different jobs, so you have to know the person you're dealing with. But in the main, they work really hard, but they're very skilled.
Are they men or women you've hired?
I've only come across one female tiler. We're an equal opportunities employer, but they're just not there. Like, there aren't that many female subcontractors either. You know, when I started, I was in my early 30s and there was nobody, you know, and people used, in the start, it was weird because they'd say, are you the new tea lady? Or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But now it's different. And people know me now because I'm at it a long time. So it's different from that point of view.
Nobody said that,
you know?
Nobody said that to you. Are you the tea lady?
They did.
Did they?
In the start, yeah.
Ah.
In the start.
Well,
like,
I can't get over it.
Worth
go on, yeah.
Scattering because they thought I was the HFA.
Oh.
So it was one or the other. Like,
you said to them, your shoddy work is safe with me, fellas. Come back.
And
tell me, that wouldn't be said today, would it? Are you the tea lady?
No, of course not, because things are different. And also, there is, you know, a lot of people, like, I'm 62 now, so you have to understand it's different. But, you know, you can say what you like. That wasn't really sexism back then either. But if you don't see it, how are you, you know, if no one has ever been female on site before, how are they supposed to know anything but that?
Well, it was it probably was, Joanne, sexism, but it wasn't called out as sexism then.
I wouldn't really call that sexism.
Really?
I wouldn't. You know what? No, I wouldn't. Like, sexism is a very serious thing, right? And so is things like sexual harassment and all that.
Yeah.
I would take all that. I'm such, like, I'm a complete women's libber. I was reading Marilyn French when I was 18. But we also have to be realistic. I want women to go out there and compete equally, but understand they have to come to it equally then as well. They can't expect it that they're going to be treated differently.
What does that mean?
So
the work has to be as good as anybody else, is that it?
And better, probably, to start with.
Yeah.
And better to start with if you want to get credibility. But the other side of that is, once you do it, they trust you more. They just trust you once you prove yourself the first time.
I get that, but would you not, as a contractor, let's say, and you have, I think you said 25 people working with you.
I had.
Okay.
Now I do subcontracting.
But only one woman. So would you not, as a female employer, let's say, if there's a woman applying, just say, look, we'll give this person every single chance under the sun because I want more people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'd agree totally with you, but they're just not there. And that lady wasn't around, even though I don't know if you can say lady now, but she was a lady as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't in the business long. She moved out of the physical side of it and she went into something else. But like, and when I was at it, it was a female contract manager I had, you know, as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like, the women I had with me were absolutely amazing. They were with me for over 20 years. There was nothing they wouldn't turn their hands to. These are the women working in the office now, not a mind if you had them outside. They've kangoed up floors, they've gone in and polished floors, they've done everything.
And then they'd have the man.
So women are capable.
And then they'd have the man, Joanne, who's clueless, checking their work, as we heard earlier.
Not really, because there aren't that many clueless guys at the level we are operating at.
My God.
You know, they're not like, they're not clueless. They know what they're doing in the main, or they don't have the job either.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm glad you said at the level you're at, because I was going to say, my God, you're not hanging around the same circles that I'm hanging around then.
Well, that's domestic.
Yeah.
And the problem with that situation is that it applies to male and female. It doesn't matter who you are. So I find that it's actually a lot easier to get people to come work with me now, because of the fact that the domestic industry has become so painful to work in. You know, you have people who don't understand it trying to get you to do stuff that you can't do in the first place, or else critiquing in a ridiculous manner. So, like, if they're going to keep that up, they're going to keep finding it harder and harder to get people to do stuff, who will charge them more and more for the hassle.
Okay.
Whereas the level we're at, we're dealing with professional people that you can have a conversation with. You can say, this is what I can do here. Technically, I'd be really good at my job. And the reason I'm really good at my job is because I know I don't know everything. So if it's something different, I'll go and find out. Because I learned that the hard way very early on when I made a mistake. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting, though. That's experience, I suppose, as well. But when you say, can I ask you this? How did you get into it, this line of work? Because am I right in saying that you trained as an accountant?
I did. And how did I get into it? You'd want to point. We'd have to go to the pub. That's a very long story. But
Where and when, Joanne? I'll be there.
I accidentally got into it, you know, in the sense that I partnered up with someone and we went into the business. They left and but you know the other side that I actually love about the construction industry?
Mm.
I look at buildings, right, and I go, we did that. We left our mark there.
Yes.
And we take it very seriously that it's as good as we can possibly make it, because I want us to be proud of it. You know, I want us to stand back and, you know, and be proud we did it, not be hiding the fact we did it because we're ashamed of the quality.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what's coming through from all the women who are working in these various trades and professions. The quality of the work, the efficiency, the effectiveness as well, the level of trust with the client. It's very, very refreshing, I must say. Joanne, you can let us know where that pint is going to happen. Maybe after a Liffey swim. Maybe after...
I'm afraid now if I went swimming the Liffey, someone would be rescuing me.
You and me both. Before I let you go, advice would you give to women entering trades or professions that are male dominated?
First of all, do it. Okay, absolutely do it.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, when you do it, don't be, you know, apologising for the fact that you're a mother or anything else. Any time I gave a talk, it was the first thing I opened with. I do not feel it ever diminished me as a business person. And the last thing I would say is do it like a woman. Do not go in there and try and be a man. Do it like a woman. It benefits everybody. I find when there is an issue on site, if the deadline is looming and we're a bit behind, they'll actually be honest with you and say something like, we're behind here, whereas it can be like two stags going head to head if it's a male contractor, because they're trying to blame each other for being behind in the first place. So it can bring huge benefits to everybody in the industry, male and female. It'll make it more professional.
Okay, good advice, I must say. And it is, I'm glad the Rosa Tralee, Caitlin Cummins has started this conversation, because it is inspiring, as you say, to listen to all the stories, and it may trigger an idea in some girls and some women's heads that they might take on this profession that they might have been thinking twice about. Good to talk to you, I must say. Really enjoy.
I have one more bit of advice.
Go on, yes.
AI is not going to replace tilers and plumbers.
Well, never a truer word spoken, that's for sure. And if, if AI could lift a door, I'd have it doing that in my house over the last while. I have two doors that I can't get carpenters for. Anyway, that's great advice, that's for sure as well. Joanne O'Regan, thank you so much indeed for joining us and for contacting Liveline on 51551. The number is 0818715815. I read with interest this morning, and it was the most read article on a number of news sites, that Denmark is slashing the VAT rate on books. to encourage reading. Now, it just got me thinking as to what we could do, because it is so beneficial for the mind and for concentration and so on, what we could do to encourage reading. Emer, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Cormac.
It is a worthwhile thing to do. I know everybody agrees. Are you a good reader? Let me ask you first of all, Emer.
I was a better reader when I was younger. Certainly, I find it much more difficult to read now as an adult, but I would like to get back to reading much more like I did in my youth.
What do you think we could do to encourage reading? The reading of books. I'm not talking about reading, scrolling in screens and so on. Reading of books. What do you think we could do?
I think the tax rate, stop charging the VAT, is a really interesting thing that Denmark are doing. I know certainly in Ireland in primary schools, I think the drop everything and read programme has been really good, and my own kids would have responded really, really well to that. So I do think that's something that we do really well here in our primary schools. And I know for me, I find our libraries amazing. They're really lovely spaces to go into. They seem to have had a lot invested in them. I think it'd be really interesting to know if we have a similar issue here, and that is the reading rate here in crisis, or are we actually doing quite well?
Well, let me say this. I think there's little or no VAT on books here or printed material, but people can correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, but I was talking to a teacher recently, a secondary school teacher of 25 years or more standing, and he told me that his students in the senior cycle now, their concentration span is now less than about 15 seconds. Where previously, he said, they could read for the whole class, or they could concentrate on a lesson for a long, long time. And he reckons it's down to a lack of reading. So it must be falling, Emer.
Yeah, it must be falling. And I do think across the board, you know, we're reading a lot, especially in the media, and being highlighted about our concentration levels, not just children, but adults as well. So I do think it's something we need to be taking really seriously and thinking of reading maybe as an alternative to screen time for kids. And it can be, my own kids are really good readers. And I do notice that when they meet with other children who read, it's a really good way for them to connect with others. And the other good thing, I think, when you have kids who are, and if you're encouraging them to read, they can read in their room by themselves. You're not worried about who might be in contact with them through their devices. You don't need to be there, so they get to have their own space. So I think we really need to do everything we can to encourage kids to read and help them to be able to concentrate and engage in the world around them.
I'll come to Gerald in just a second. 51551 and others as well. What do you think we should do to encourage reading is what we're talking about. But Emer, is it hard to get people, your kids now, for example, is it hard? You say they're good readers, but is it hard to get them into reading books?
We were lucky. It wasn't hard to get them into reading books. They really, really love it. But I do notice if they need to stop reading, they might groan a little bit about it. But if we ask them to stop doing something on a screen, that's a much bigger deal in terms of their behaviour, and they're much, you know, much more unhappy about that. So we've been really lucky in that they do really, really like to read. But I do know other parents are really struggling.
Because of screen time, is it?
I think because of screen time, or maybe, you know, if you think about years ago, you might be on a Lewis or a bus and you'd see people, not a Lewis, a train or a bus, and you'd see people reading books, whereas now people are just scrolling on their phones. So we're not seeing people read as much as we used to see people reading around us.
Do you know that there's a very popular Instagram site called Hot Dudes Reading?
No, I don't know that.
And this was written, Maureen Dowd was writing about this in the Irish Times not so long ago. And apparently it's men who read books in public that women or others take pictures of them and put them on this website, this Instagram account, I should say, Hot Dudes Reading, because men who read are so rare, she says, that they're now sexy.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Is it right?
Is it right? Yeah, maybe it is right.
Stay with me, Emer. I have a hot dude.
You'll have to try it yourself. See what happens.
Why, are you suggesting I don't read?
I don't know. You can, next time you're on the train, take out a book, see what happens.
I'm neither a hot dude, but I do read. But let me tell you, I'm going to introduce you now, Emer, to a hot dude that does read. Gerald, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, Cormac. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. You are. What age are you? You're young.
I'm 23 years of age.
So you are one of a rare animal, Gerald, that reads books. Is that right?
Correct and right. I was just wondering where you found my Instagram there.
Yeah, so you are a hot dude that reads. What do you read, tell me?
I like to cast a wide net. So I recently am just getting into Agatha Christie books. So kind of crime and the kind of whodunit genre.
Yeah.
But also recently I just finished like 4 years in the Cauldron. So Brian O'Donovan's memoir from his time in the States. So it's I cast a wide net, as I say.
Okay, very good. What do you think you get, apart from the actual story or the information, what do you get from reading, Gerald?
I think it's maybe the medium of the book. The kind of sense of you're sitting down with this in your hands. There's no pings, there's no notifications. This is your sitting down and reading this material. It doesn't matter what it is, but you have a little bit of time to kind of just take that in.
Mm. Do you find it relaxing?
Yeah, definitely. Again, as I said, it's once you kind of read the back of a book and you read the title and you start it, you kind of know what to expect. It's exactly what you're getting. There's no change. If you were to, as you were saying, maybe scroll on your phone on the train or the bus, the minute you scroll, it's something different. Whereas with a book, it doesn't really change.
Yeah. And you are on social media, are you? You do use it?
Yep, I do, yeah.
Okay. And do you find, or have you found that that social media in particular is addictive and that it impacted your ability to read a book? Did that happen to you?
Maybe. I'd say so. The college lifestyle doesn't really lend itself to quiet reading.
Are you in college at the moment, Gerald?
I've just finished.
Okay.
So my admissions next week are 2 weeks' time, I think.
Okay. Do you mind me asking what you studied?
Economics.
Okay, by cripes. Okay. So tell me this, that you think it's good in terms of your mind, that it relaxes you and that it kind of slows you down. And would you say you prefer it to social media?
I wouldn't say I prefer it, but I like knowing what I'm getting in advance.
Okay.
Of reading.
Stay with me, Gerald. Darina, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Cormac. How are you?
Not too bad. What can we do you reckon, to encourage the reading of books?
Well, I know, for example, I work in libraries, in Mayo Library, and we have a very successful Summer Stars initiative in all the libraries in Ireland. And that runs really well, and we have more kids every year signing up for it. So I was just kind of half jokingly wondering if we should do a version for adults.
Yeah.
It might be something of a thought, just to encourage. I think the biggest problem, and I'm guilty of this myself, I think we all are, the biggest enemy of reading is scrolling. I think that's something that we all fall victim to. And I used to find myself, I read a lot, obviously. But at one point, I'm particularly thinking of COVID, when I got kind of hooked on the numbers and the cases and everything, and I was constantly scrolling and updating and realised I was getting a bit more anxious. So I kind of made a concerted effort to just remove the phone from my presence altogether. If I was downstairs, I'd put the phone upstairs. And I got back into my reading and anxiety levels went away again and everything was well with the world. So you put the phone away
and you started reading.
Put the phone, yeah.
Okay.
Put the phone, because I find sometimes if I read and I have the phone handy, I might be reading something and something catches my attention. I go, oh, that's really interesting. And I go to Google it. Okay. And then you go down a rabbit hole on the phone and the book gets pushed to one side. So I just find if I'm at a physical remove from the phone, even though I might reach for it, it's not there. I'm not going to bother getting up and going looking for it.
I think you've hit the bullseye there in a number of ways. Put the phone away. The Summer Stars for Adults, I think, is a very, very good idea, Darina. Darina, thank you very much indeed. Good ideas to get people reading books. Emer, thank you as well. Hot Dude Reading, Gerald, thank you as well.